So the Sefer Chaim Brocha, which is one of the few Sefer which we have, which actually has a Haskama for Reb Chaim Rizker, so he writes over there, when he goes through, he makes a list of the things you want to look at when you're looking for an esrog. So one of the things you want to look at, the first thing he says is that the esrog should be clean. Now, when we say the esrog should be clean, there really are two parts to that. They were talking about an esrog which is mehudar. There really are two parts to that. The first step, as the Mishaber points out from the Mabit and his Shuvas, that we're looking at psulin, whether it's possible, you first look at it at arm's length, at a quick glance, move it around, and then first looking at the chaitim, and then you move down to see if you can see all of the esrog from the bottom going up. So you're covering every area. He says something which is not easily noticeable at arm's length at a quick glance does not create a psul. Certain types of psulim will be relevant even if they're not visible like that, and we'll explain this as we go along. Now, this esrog we're dealing with, well, we look at it at arm's length, we look quickly, and we notice that there is this black dot on the chaitim. So what part is considered the chaitim? So we look at the esrog. Esrog is shaped somewhat like a tower. So you have the part which is going straight up, and then it starts to slope towards the top. Then you have the uppermost part. The uppermost part, according to all Rishonim, is considered the chaitim. According to most Rishonim, the part which slopes and goes upwards is considered the chaitim. So in general, we assume that that's the halachic definition of chaitim, starting from the part which slopes and goes upwards. In this situation, our black dot is found in the part which is sloping upwards. So therefore, even though it's only one dot, it's going to be problematic. If it had been lower down, so that is going to only be a problem if it's found in multiple places on the esrog. That's a question of discoloration. What are the other concerns that we have besides discoloration? So we have, going through the list, and we'll go back to some of the colors issues as well. The second point is that the esrog should be bumpy. So our esrog is nice and bumpy, Baruch Hashem. That's great. The third point, he says, that you want that the stem, the ukit, should be going into the esrog. It shouldn't be sticking out. It should be going in indented somewhat. This is slightly indented, not as much as maybe we would like, but that's not ma'akev. That's a hitter that he wants to look at. The fourth one he looks at is the shape. The shape should be like a migdal, which means it's pretty much straight going up, and then it should slope towards the top. And the fifth point that he says a person wants to look at is that the ukits and the pitim should be pretty much one above the other. Should be straight up onto the other, and the pitim should be shalin. Those are the five or six points that he says. What are the psulim do we have? So those are the question of what's considered an esrog, which is mahudr. So you pick up your esrog, and you want to see that it looks very nice. So you go through these five or six points. Again, that it's clean, the first point that it's clean, that's bumpy, that the ukit is indented, that the shape is like a migdal, and that the pitim is directly above where the ukitz is, and the pitim is shalin. Next step, you want your esrog to be green. You want your esrog to be yellow. What color should it be? So, esrog is supposed to be yellow. An esrog which is green is kosher, Mishabura says, because it's going to eventually ripen and turn yellow. If, however, it has not started the process of ripening at all, we have to be concerned maybe it's not going to do that. So a dark green esrog which has not started the ripening process at all, the Mishnah Berurah suggests we should not use. If you see already starting to yellow in some places, so then you can use it. He does raise a concern if it's splotches of green and yellow throughout the different parts of the esrog, so that maybe is like a manumer with a color which is kosher. The color itself is kosher, but it has this leopard-like look of spots, etc., which might be problematic. So a person should try to avoid that situation. A person can take an esrog, put a slice of apple next to it, and put it in a bag, and it will hasten the ripening process. The other concerns which we have, besides this issue of discoloration, and one of them is the concern of niklaf and chaser. If sometimes a slight amount of the skin of the esrog has been ripped off, it could be from a scratch from a leaf, it could be from a fingernail when a person is holding it, and you scrape off part of the layer of the esrog. So there are three layers in an esrog. Actually, there are four layers in the esrog. The outer layer is like a glaze, a shiny glaze. Then there's the coloration layer, which is a yellow or a green. Then there's a white layer underneath it, which is the flesh. And then there are, in all the way inside, the place where you find the seeds, the sac which holds the seeds. So for our purposes, we're going to focus on the outer three. If just the glaze has been removed, but the coloration is still there, the lucky is it's not a problem at all. That's totally fine. If, however, the coloration has been removed, and you're already able to see the white flesh which is beneath it, that's a problem of niklav. Niklav, if it's found in the chotum, is a problem even in one spot. It's found lower in the esrog. Again, it's only if it's in multiple places. But the next step which happens is when it's niklav, is it starts to oxidize and change colors. And that is more of a concern. We'll get back to that. The other issue which we have is called a chaser. There might be that there's a hole, something, a thorn or something of that, punctured into it and made a hole. So a hole alone is not a problem as long as no flesh has been removed. None of the esrog is missing, it just has a hole. Unless the hole goes all the way into where the seeds are. So this is common on some of the esrogim which come without a pitum. They have a conical indentation on the top, and sometimes it has a hole there, like going inwards. That hole sometimes can go all the way into the Chadrei Hazera, and a person should, if he has such a type of an esrog which has a hole in it, he should be in touch with an expert to calculate if it's going to be problematic. Sometimes what happens is when you get a hole, so a hole alone is not a problem, but again, it starts to discolor, and we're back to this issue of coloration. So let's talk about the coloration issue. So the halacha says that white and black are problematic. Brown is not a color, is not a problem. A reddish brown is not a problem. Green is not a problem unless it's a very, very dark green, and it's a place where esrogim do not grow like that. Black, if it's in a place where esrogim grow like that, it's not a problem either. Sometimes you have a black color on your esrog because a piece of dirt gets embedded into the glaze to the point that it's hard to remove it. That really does not pass the esrog, but since we're always not always sure, we will avoid that type of a situation. Many times a person as a mumka can remove that and make your esrog quote-unquote kosher again. Sometimes it's blackened because there's a hole there and it's going to discolor and turn brown or black. That's more of a problem because that's the esrog itself which is changing color. Or it could be a niklaf which is going to discolor. So even though the niklaf alone might not be a problem, but the fact that it changes colors is going to be a problem. Interestingly enough, sometimes what happens is the water will sit on the esrog, and if the sunlight hits it in a certain way, it magnifies the rays of the sunlight and actually causes a burn on the skin of the esrog. And it will burn away part of the skin. So again, you have a problem that you're actually changing the color of the esrog itself, as opposed to having something which is not part of the esrog. So something which is not part of the esrog does not really pass through the esrog. The esrog itself changes colors. That's going to be problematic. So a person would stay away from a black dot. If it's on the chotem and it's easily visible, it's going to be a problem. If it's on the chotem and not easily visible, it's the same as the rest of the esrog. The rest of the esrog, as long as it's visible, and it's in two or three places which are spread out over the majority of the esrog. So if you'd have one here and one here, they are over a small area of the esrog. You have one here, and one here, and one here, you start drawing a circle around the three of them, it covers a larger area of the esrog, that's going to be problematic. Sometimes you have something which is known as a bletflech. The Ramah has a different name for it, he calls it mool. Is the fact that the esrog grows with leaves which are very sharp, and there's thorns there, etc., and they scratch the surface of the esrog. So getting an esrog which is totally clean from any of those is very difficult. When they cultivate it, they will protect it, put some type of protection around it, prevent it from being scratched by everything which is around it. Naturally, the eshek will grow like that. Because it's natural, so the Ramah says it's not a psul, because that's actually how it grows naturally. So that will come in the form sometimes of a brown dot, a whitish color, which is coming from the leaf sticking against it for a little bit and then pulling away. Sometimes it'll be like a form of a line, etc. It comes in many different forms. A person who's familiar with it, we're able to tell that that's what it is. A person we have an expert there who can answer your question. He says, no, that's not a problem. It's not a color, which is a problem, because it's from the leaves, etc. So that is not halachically an issue. In regards to being, you're getting your nicest esrog, preferably you should get an esrog that doesn't have that, and you have to pay a little bit extra for that. How much extra do you have to pay? So halacha says that hider mitzvah achlish, for the purpose of hider mitzvah, the person would add on up to one-third. There's machlokes of what one-third means. One shot means if you find your minimum price of a halakhically valid esrog, you have to be willing to pay up to one-third more than that to get a nicer esrog. So if your minimum price in that your city is to get an esrog, is kosher esrog, is $60, so you'd be willing to pay up to $80 or $90 to get a nicer esrog. If you calculate the one-third within, so it's 60 divided by 3 is 20, so $20 is 80. If you count the millibar, so you say, when I add it, I divide it into two, and I add one more, so I have three $30 increments. So now $30 is one-third of the total. That's one version of how you calculate one-third. The other way you calculate one-third is, you're ready to decide on your asset that you're willing to buy, you're willing to pay, and then you find one which is nicer within a range of a third. So a person should be willing to do that for the purpose of hider. Beyond that, a person is not mechayev to do. A person wants to do that, not to have a manoyim. Obviously, it's praiseworthy. So those are some of the points that a person wants to look at when he's buying an esrog. Thank you for listening.